if anything, I'm grateful for having ADD. You know, it's made me a very social, you know, person that just like loves to live and experience life in the moment and not have to worry about, you know, having to structure my studying and all that stuff, because I don't know, I was just too focused on time passing in the moment, and it's made for a lot of great memories, a lot of great friends, and it's going to make for a great life.
All right. Welcome, everybody. I am Dr. John Duffy, and I have the pleasure of having a very special guest sitting in with me. In the spirit of the idea that everybody's got an important story to tell and we can learn something from everyone's story and be inspired by it, I welcome Matt to the studio. Welcome, Matt.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Thanks for coming in, man. All right. So you have had an interesting few years here. Do you mind just kind of giving us the broad strokes of what the last few years have been like? You're how old? You're
19.
19 years old. Okay, so last couple years of your life. Just tell us a little bit about what things have been like, broadly speaking.
Let's see. I mean, to start, I would say that I've had a very memorable high school experience. I had loads of friends, and coming from a Catholic grade school, you know, I was forced to jump into a public high school in which none of my childhood friends went to. So freshman and sophomore year, I started off great, made a bunch of friends, really set a foundation for myself. And
can I stop you?
Sure.
How did you do that? I mean, I work with a lot of kids around that age and who make some kind of funky jump from middle school to high school and struggle with just connecting with people. How did you connect with people going into a school, a much bigger school, if I remember right, that you really didn't know anybody in?
I guess it's really just the fact that I had nothing to lose. And, I went to a grade school with the same, 90 people for 12 years straight. And so it was my chance to really sprout,
yeah,
in a sense. And a very important part of that was really just not allowing myself to question any decisions or actions that I made, in regards to making friends or establishing myself in the high school that I went to. So, I would just say that it was a very free spirit that I had.
So you must have had some degree of confidence at 14, 15 years old to come into a place and think, you know what, no judgment, I'm just going to be free and connect with people. And it almost sounds like, if something doesn't go great, that's okay. Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I had good confidence. I was athletic. I was smart. But I knew there was more. And I knew that everyone else was in the same situation as me. And so for me to, not have any confidence would... I knew it would just set me back later on down the road.
Right. Well, for sure. But just to hold your feet to the fire a little bit, I would argue people weren't in the same boat as you. I mean, you were the new guy, right? I mean, some of these kids probably had gone to school for 12 years together, and here comes this new guy. Oh, this guy's Matt. I don't know this guy.
Yeah, and I guess part of that mystery of who I was really inspired me to, prove people wrong, or I don't even know what to say about it, but it was just a test for myself and for other people, really just to be who I wanted to be and not who people thought I was,
should be or something, huh? So how did things progress from there? So I get that, that actually was a pretty smooth transition for being a big transition. Sounds like you handled that really nimbly. You're a pretty resilient guy.
Yeah. So that transition, it was great. And I really didn't think anything of it. I know a lot of kids struggle in terms of setting a foundation for themselves early on.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I never really paid much thought into how well I handled the situation that I was in. And that really just built up momentum for, you know, a continuing bit of success throughout high school, and led to a lot of happiness, led to a lot of great opportunities, and discovery for, you know, what I really love and what I want to do with my life. You
know? So high school, it sounds like, were really good years for you. Tell me a little bit about those 4 years of your life and how they went and what your interests, where they brought you and things like that.
I grew up playing sports. I mean, I feel like that's the first place to start. And I was very athletic, very fast, very, you know, just quick and natural at every sport that I played. But with that being said, I was small, you know, everyone else was bigger than me. And, that helped me because I had, as a small player, it forced me to get on the same level as the kids that were, you know, bigger, stronger, faster than me, who basically ran the game. And I don't know. I would say that, you know, being small kind of ruined my confidence in a sense, although I had confidence in, you know, my capabilities as an athlete. But I would say that, you know, that was when I started to question if I really wanted to play sports. You know, being having a disadvantage of being small kind of corrupted my idea of what I could do with athletics, and I thought I would stay small forever. But I still continued to play.
Yeah.
But I didn't push myself as hard as I should have, or as hard as I could have, because I just didn't see any worth to it, because I figured I'd be small, you know.
Yeah,
like, at the end of the day, I'm still small, and so who cares if I put in the extra work?
I always find that to be one of the most brutal parts of being a teenager. You can be really, really great at something, but if physically you're just not in a place that you can, you know, perfect that, and being small is one of those things. Hard to do as a smaller guy, right? I mean, that's one thing. Doing this job, I always find heartbreaking is if I get a guy or a girl in here who physically just isn't in a place where they can thrive athletically, even if they're great at it. I mean,
right.
I worked with a kid who was, I think he was 13 or 14, and was an amazing basketball player. He was 5'3", and he wasn't budging a whole lot from that. So his basketball career was over, you know, by mm-hmm. the time he got to high school, just for size alone, you know. Like, but it sounds like you elevated your game. It sounds like you – what was your sport?
Well, my best sport was lacrosse.
Yeah.
And I played football freshman year, but truth be told, that was – just because I had played before and it was a great way to meet kids. And
yeah.
I mean, it was, I still, you know, would talk to kids who I met freshman year of football, my senior year, you know, it was great. But yeah, I'd say my number one sport was lacrosse.
Yeah. Yeah. And you, the fact that you were able to kind of keep in touch with these guys you played football with all the way through, that speaks to your personality, doesn't it? I mean, not every kid is going to be able to maintain social contact like that all the way through high school. It's one of the toughest social times in life. And somehow you were able to make this work for you. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I figured if I met this person at some point in my life, there's really no need, especially going to school with them, there's no need to fall out of a friendship with them, despite, you know, how involved you are with that person and what you do with your life, you know. And so I guess it didn't hurt me to be nice and stay friends with kids that I got along with my freshman year of high school.
Let me take a little segue here, because I work with a lot of kids who are really socially anxious. And if they were listening right now, they'd be like, man, this guy is a phenomenon. Like, you know, because they overthink every social encounter. You know, a lot of kids do this. And so the idea of talking to a guy who he knew 3 years ago, or approaching somebody in a class who he doesn't know very well, a lot of kids would say, oh, I could never do that. What do you think? Like, what would you say to a kid like that?
Well, first off, I would say that I still have that problem. I still question social interaction with people every day of my life. I mean, who doesn't? But I guess it really comes down to your actions and overcoming those anxious thoughts, because when you let things play out, if you're nice and you're social, or you're, I don't know, if you're just if you have a good attitude about making friends, not much can go wrong. If you are a nice person, people will like you. That's just how things go. And I just think it's totally worth taking the risk. You know, if some person has a problem with it, another five people don't.
Dude, that is perfectly said. And if you're a nice person, people will like you. And on the whole, things are going to work out. And I think underneath that, you're saying maybe not every single moment of every single interaction, but on the whole, pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So carry me through those high school years a little bit more. So are you a lacrosse player all the way through?
Yes, I played lacrosse throughout high school. However, my senior year, I didn't play lacrosse and ended up playing rugby. My dad played, but, you know, that's further down the road.
Okay.
So I would have to say that I was a little bit, I don't want to say overwhelmed, because that has some negative connotation to it. I would say that I was just very surrounded by new opportunities.
Yeah. So how did you decide which opportunities to pick up on, which to leave behind?
I have no idea how to answer that question, because pretty much anything that was thrown my way, I was more than happy to get involved in, just because it was fun and I, you know, sought good opportunities in every opportunity, really.
Matt, knowing you a little bit, I would have been shocked if you had said anything else. Like, I can picture you exude this kind of joy of life, and I would think any opportunity that comes your way, you're likely to take it. And I can see that working in so many ways. Like, I can imagine you look back in high school and think, I don't regret many days because I took a lot of opportunities. I can also envision, though, that there's a tipping point somewhere where it's like, oh, I think I've said yes too many times.
Absolutely,
here.
So absolutely.
What happens in that situation?
That's how over-involvement occurs, is just saying yes to everything because you think you'd be good at it. But
so where does that fall apart for a guy? Is it academics? Is it home life? Is it socially? Is it athletic?
I would say for me, it was academics, just because my place has never really been the classroom. You know, I have a learning disability, attention deficit disorder.
Right.
And so that has just made time in the classroom very difficult. You know, difficult to get the work done, correctly. And just like confidence wise, like it really takes a toll on your confidence to learn. And so I guess I made up for it in how I interacted with people, because
yeah,
there was no intellectual identity, you know, per se. And it was really just being a good person and being nice and just interacting with somebody in a way that both of you feel happy about.
And it sounds like that's so that's where you mastered your world, huh? It's kind of like, well, socially I can connect.
Yeah.
But intellectually, in the classroom, it was a struggle at times.
Oh, absolutely.
And ADD is, you know, kind of such a broad issue right now. And there's some debate in my field about whether it's even a real phenomenon or whether it's like kind of like boys being boys and
right,
being inattentive. Would you argue, no, this is a real phenomenon. I really suffered and it really disrupts my ability to learn effectively.
I would say that it absolutely disrupts my ability to learn. But what I've really come to realize throughout the past couple of years is that it's not so much something, it's, you know, being diagnosed with ADD, it's not like being diagnosed with cancer where you've got a certain time to live, or something literally is like happening inside of your body that is killing you, mm-hmm, you know?
Right. Attention. Not progressive. It's not fatal in any way. Right. 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 Good point.
And my immediate reaction to finding out that I had a disability was, it was almost, I don't want to say like cancer, but it was, it really took a toll on me. Like, whoa, there's like something wrong with me. Like, I'm not like everyone else. It got in the way of my work ethic, and it allowed for excuses. It allowed for doubt in situations that had no reason for doubt and questioning. So, although I agree with the fact that some people feel as if it's not a real phenomenon or whatnot, I don't know. It's truly how you deal with it that gives you, I guess that would answer that question, I guess.
Right. I'm glad you answered it like that, Matt, because a lot of people in my field and in my generation are kind of dismissive of elements of ADD, in particular, like kind of like that emotional part, like that it actually does impact like how I feel about myself, how I feel about my degree of intelligence, and that, you know, like recognizing, I have something not everybody has. That's striking to me. It's not cancer, but it's different, and I don't like that, you know. Yeah. And would you argue that we, my generation, we're not sensitive enough to that? Do you feel like we're a little flip about it?
I feel as if we're a little bit oversensitive in a sense that you take it to an extreme that it doesn't necessarily have to be taken to. You know, there are so many ways to treat ADD that you kind of just get overwhelmed with it, and it really corrupts your train of thought or the way you think about things, and then you see something happen where those negative thoughts build up, and it creates, you know, a subconsciousness that is unhealthy, and it's dangerous for who you are as a human being and what you want to do with your life.
Wow, no small deal. So you would argue, no, we're making kind of too big a deal out of it. Would you argue like, let me take my, you know, Adderall or Ritalin or Focalin or whatever med it is, and let me kind of adapt and problem solve my way through things intellectually, and it'll be fine. But don't like make that the lead about your discussion about me. That's not that doesn't define me in some way.
Absolutely does not define me. If anything, I'm grateful for having ADD. You know, it's made me a very social, you know, person that just like loves to live and experience life in the moment and not have to worry about, you know, having to structure my studying and all that stuff, because I don't know, I was just too focused on time passing in the moment, and it's made for a lot of great memories, a lot of great friends, and it's going to make for a great life.
That is about the freshest possible way to look at something, a diagnosis of ADD. But I get it. I get your point. And you feel like, hey, man, if this never happened, if I was never diagnosed with ADD, I wouldn't have had this kind of rich social life and these encounters that I've had. And the price I pay in the classroom or studying, I'm willing to pay that price. Is it fair to say that?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's unfortunate to not do as well in the classroom, because nowadays that's very important, and one must not forget that.
Right.
right. But there's more to life than, you know, the time that you spend in a classroom. I mean, you go to school for a certain amount of years to learn something, which is, you know, vital to what you do with the rest of your life. However, I'd say, I don't know. I mean, you spend more time outside of the classroom, so I think that counts for something. And what you do outside of the classroom counts for something.
Absolutely. Without a doubt. And maybe we discount that. I think we so focus on, you know, kind of grades and ACT scores and what college you get into, and miss what happens outside of class.
Well, yeah. I mean, you look at it, people are defined nowadays by a piece of paper. You know, a resume kind of speaks in a different sense, because it shows you what you did. But I mean, your GPA, your ACT score, your grades in all of your classes, that really defines a yes and a no. I mean, with college,
it really does.
You won't be allowed to attend a school because of what they see on paper.
Right. And you're right that it's like a sheet of paper. It's a transcript. It says, you know, a few basic facts about you, right? And not a much more.
Right. Yeah. And for me, somebody who thrived completely outside of my time in the classroom, it has made for, I don't know, it made me question what I was good at. And it made me question what my God-given, you know, talents and abilities, it made me question their worth.
So we'll get to that in a minute, because I know that that's like important, critical to you. But one final question about kind of the ADD thing that kind of nags at me. Did it feel like some comment on your intellectual ability? Did you feel like you weren't that smart because of this diagnosis and because of the impact it had on your schoolwork?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, without having anyone say it to me, I felt dumb, you know, plain and simple. I felt dumb, and I wasn't able to admit that to myself or anyone else, but it's what I felt, and how I felt oftentimes affected how I acted. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but it's a lesson that everyone has to learn, you know, regardless of the content of your life. It doesn't define you. Something like that does not define you.
Well, and speaking to you, the idea that you felt dumb feels borderline absurd to me. I mean, you seem like such a smart, articulate, well-spoken guy that the idea that you are anything other than really intelligent seems almost implausible to me. You know, like, so do you think there's anything that we could do differently for kids who suffer from this thing to not make them feel that way?
Man, I don't know, but the initial point of diagnosis or finding out that you have a disability, I think that is the most important time to take action or to do something to make them not feel a certain way, because I never had that. I just accepted the fact that I had a disability, and I, you know, felt like there was nothing that I could do or that anyone could do for that matter, to help me change my train of thought. But I mean, if you start early, it's going to help you down the road and
got it.
Solve the issue that everyone's going to have to face.
So in a way, parents take note, right? To sit down with your kids if they're being diagnosed with something like ADHD or any learning disability, and talk about what that means, maybe what that doesn't mean, and don't assume that this is no big deal for your kid just because it means they take a pill every day or something. It's a big deal to get that, to carry that diagnosis, especially early on, huh?
Right, absolutely. And I'd say one of the most important things is recognizing strengths, because although you're not, you have a deficit to your attention, you do not have a deficit to other parts of your life, you
right.
know, and in acknowledging that you are in fact better at some things, you know, in spite or despite this diagnosis. I think it's very important to be conscious of what you are good at and the talents and the capabilities that you have.
Matt, that is such an important point, because in the wake of that kind of diagnosis, you know, 95% of the discussions between parents and kids can be about, you got to pay better attention, you got to work harder in school, you're going to have to work harder than the next kid, right?
Right.
And you ignore what is undoubtedly an enormous set of strengths, right? And you spend like this precious little time talking about what's going really well, right? And in
right.
your life, a lot was going really well, right?
Oh,
you were
absolutely.
Connecting socially, you were an athlete. Life was pretty good on the whole.
Yeah, it was. And it continued to be great. But I mean, at a certain point, something like that comes back to bite you, you know? You think that naturally those thoughts that you're having are going to go away, but really they just pile up and affect everything else that happens from there on out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. All right, Matt. So to that end, can you tell us a little bit about how things went from the high school years that were somewhat conflicted, but by and large pretty good, right? Other than maybe some things that happened in the classroom. How did the arc of your life go from there?
Well, I mean, certain things went up, certain things went down, you know, for better or for worse. But I'd say from that point, I don't know. I just had this lingering thought of why certain things happened in my life. You know, if I got a bad grade on a test, oh, it's because I had ADD. If I, you know, didn't catch something in lacrosse practice or didn't run a play correctly, oh, it's because of ADD. You know, like it became like something that I would blame for, you know, blame certain events in my life for, when really it's not the sole reason for things that happen in your life. And
did you feel like you were making excuses in a way? Like, did you feel like, oh, I'm blaming ADD for everything, when sometimes it's like, oh, I need to step up my lacrosse game a little bit.
Right. I definitely thought I would blame that because, I mean, it's hard to say just because of how long ago it happened, but, I don't know. I guess it was me just not pushing myself. I never really pushed myself to the extent that I should have. And pushing yourself is it's the biggest thing in getting better at anything in life.
And that that pushing yourself, that grit and tenacity, where was that lacking in your life? Was it in every area? Was it academic? Was it, you know, athletic? Was it everything?
Yeah, true. I mean, truly, it was everything, because until that point, I had been naturally good at everything that I did.
Is that right?
I mean, yeah. I don't want to toot my own horn, but I was very good at everything that I did, from sports even school. I struggled in school, but I was still able to recognize the fact that I was smart. I was creative.
Right.
I was very, very creative.
Yes.
You know, I was good at art. And so I guess I never pushed myself, because I got away with a minimal amount of effort. You know, I was able to stand out with a minimal amount of effort.
Kind of a dangerous thing, right? I mean, it seems like, boy, how good for you. How great is that? You know, like, not many guys get to get away with leaving a lot on the court and still doing okay.
Right.
But in a way, it's like, eventually that can hit the fan, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I didn't realize that at the time. I thought that I could keep getting away with it, you know, putting in half the effort and just, you know, I thought nothing of it because I was getting away with it and there were no immediate consequences for it.
Well, and even in the long run, you got into a good college, right? I assume several of them, but you went to a good school. Tell me about how things went, you know, after high school.
Well, after high school, I attended the University of Missouri, and it was one of, I'd say, 10 schools that I applied to, all within the Midwest. And this was actually, I mean, Mizzou was the furthest west, or the furthest away, that I actually applied. And I don't know. I liked all the schools that I visited.
Mm-hmm.
But with Mizzou, it was far enough away for me to feel like I was, I don't know, it made me feel like I was starting anew at something, that I had a fresh start to be something or I guess what I'm trying to say is, around the Midwest, there are some phenomenal schools, but
sure,
I felt like I was, you know, tied down to who I was in high school.
So you got this opportunity at Mizzou maybe to redefine yourself?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, you know, similar to my freshman year of high school, my freshman year of college, I had this opportunity, this fresh start, to do what I wanted to do, what I was capable of doing.
And you know you've got the personality, you know you're outgoing enough, you know you're going to be able to connect with people. And did that all bear itself out once you landed on campus?
Yes, but I guess I didn't really have, there are 35,000 people at the school.
Right.
So out of all 35,000 people, who's to say that, you know, the person that I meet or anybody that I meet is worth my time? You know what I mean?
Yes, you have to be discerning somehow,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah. You know, I know that one person that I'd meet one day, I probably wouldn't see for the rest of my college career.
Right.
You know, and so that really made for, it made me question the people that I met. It made me question myself, what I was like around people because, you know, it just didn't seem worth it for me to stand out like I did in high school.
Got it.
Because I felt like I would have been forgotten about, you know, the 10 minutes later, you know, I was just another person and I was used to being so much more than that.
Got it. So in retrospect, do you feel like I probably would have been better suited to a smaller campus, something with just a few thousand students as opposed to 35,000?
Yes. But that isn't to say that my time at Mizzou has been bad. I mean, it's truly these past couple of years have been a blessing. I have friends that I'm going to have for the rest of my life, mm-hmm. and would have it no other way, you know? But at the same time, I definitely wish I would have considered a small school a little bit more when I was a senior in high school.
It's interesting. So you know, we make assumptions about like extroverts and introverts, and you seem like a fairly extroverted guy.
Yeah.
And one would think like, oh yeah, you're going to be able to make that big campus kind of work for you. Mm-hmm. But I get your point. Like if you're like, well, I kind of got lost in there and I wasn't making the impact with people one by one by one that I thought I would.
Absolutely.
Did that change? I remember you telling me that you joined a fraternity. Did that change when you kind of had this collection of 100 or so guys who you kind of thought were, you know, going to be closer to you than the masses?
Yes. I mean, it allowed me to develop depth in the relationships that I was building with people.
Right.
You know, I had the opportunity to understand who people were, where they came from, and see them regularly, you know. But with that being said, there was a lot of competition, and the competition was fierce, and it was in a realm that I didn't necessarily have, you know, I don't want to say interest in, but, you know, everyone was a bio major, business major, wanted to be a politician, and anything like that.
Got it. So you see your contemporaries have this drive toward some profession or some major or something like that, and you weren't feeling that same drive.
No, not in the urgency that they were.
Right.
And since a lot of that revolved around the classes that you're taking, or it kind of came for full circle where I wasn't comfortable in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
That showed, which killed confidence in my ability to stand out as a human being.
Right.
You know, there is a fine line between who you are as a human being and who you are as a student. And I came into conflict with that, where I felt who I was as a student and who I was or what my major was. I thought that really defined me. And it created, I don't know, this false sense of identity for who I was, because people didn't really get to see the real me, the fun, outgoing, social person who truly, I mean, in high school, I was involved enough to say that I have inspired and changed people's lives in little ways or big ways.
Right.
You know, I had a voice that impacted people. you know, and
no small thing. I mean, you know, if you achieve nothing else in those 4 years, but you feel like, oh, I've impacted people in a positive way.
Absolutely.
You know, you walk away pretty happy, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
But you're not running into that down in college.
No, because that to bring up the piece of paper, defining somebody by a piece of paper, that's sort of what I saw was the components of your academic career or anything like that.
So it sounds to me almost like you had this kind of crystal clear sense of identity in high school. And then once you get to college, as an identity starts to become kind of gelling around majors and professions and things, that sense of identity kind of eluded you to some extent, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
And to what degree does that shake a guy's confidence?
Oh, to an absolute extreme. It makes you question everything that you've ever known in your life because of where you find yourself in a particular moment.
And is there a lesson for either my generation or your generation in this about, like, you know, putting too much pressure on kids to determine who they want to be or what they want to be at an early age? Or, you know, like, is there something somebody could have done to kind of help you through that freshman year, that sophomore year, to take some of that pressure off and allow you to kind of develop more organically than something that feels a little like false and wooden to me all of a sudden?
I don't know if there's anything that anyone could have done, because truly what I, you know now, or what I see my past as now, has been something that I've had to kind of understand by myself. I'm the type of person that, is very stubborn, when it comes to being advised, you know.
Say more about that. What do you mean?
That's just, I mean, truly, that's just like a nice way of putting it. But like, if somebody tells me to do something, I will question it because I don't like being told what to do.
Okay.
You know? Yep. And what I saw as being right was, you know, being a business major and getting grades and, you know, getting a job behind a desk where I'm punching in numbers. Like, I thought that's what I was supposed to do in order to secure the rest of my life the way that I felt like I had to. And so I didn't do what I – or even think to do what I wanted to do. You know what I mean?
I do. First of all, how did you have that strong a sense of self to know this isn't the right answer for me? I mean, I was an accounting major, undergrad, and – my parents effectively told me, you're going to be an accounting major undergrad. And I just kind of went along with the program because that's what I was told to do. And in fact, I was an accountant for years after that because I really didn't think through, ever really consider, well, what really works best for me or what would work best for me. And yet here you are at 19 already questioning everything the adults around you are telling you, right? And so they're giving you what sounds like good advice. Be a business major, you're going to get a good job. And you're saying, I'm not so sure I want to do that.
It's just so weird now that I look at it because, I mean, I am so grateful for the influences of my life and people telling me, like, yeah, I don't think you're a business major, you know? Like, I don't see you as that.
Right.
And what they had was good advice, and what I had was just, I don't know, fear, truly. Like, it was the fear of failing at doing what I loved. And that to me just, I mean, that can completely cause you to make decisions that you know you don't feel in your gut. You know the right in your head, or you feel like the right in your head because they're secure and it'll offer you security, but I don't know, it was I was too stubborn to accept people's opinion of who I was and what I was good at. You know, I thought I could get away with, you know, being a business major because I was capable of graduating with that degree. But what I'm capable of isn't necessarily the best route. I think what's important is to do what you think you can thrive at. That's the most important thing, is just do what you love and what you want to see yourself and what you can see yourself thrive in.
That is beautifully eloquent. Now, we are sitting here during what would be your second semester of your sophomore year at Mizzou, right? So for some reason or other, you are back here kind of for better or worse. And I'm not sure how you depict being back home and kind of, I don't know if you consider this regrouping. How do you depict this period of time and what brought you to this point?
Well, I mean, there's two ways of looking at it. I'm either home and I'm miserable and my life is over and all my friends are off doing their thing in college and mm-hmm. enjoying life and stuff. Or you could look at it as a me, myself, and I kind of time period where I am my own best friend. I love, like, falling in love with yourself is like the greatest thing in the world, and this is my time to do it. And, you know, my time to really work on myself and not care about what other people are doing. Because my only focus is bettering myself.
Yeah.
I you can't afford not to be like that.
You're such an upbeat guy. I mean, you know, like, you're right. I work with a lot of guys, mostly guys in similar situations. I talked to a guy yesterday who, is home after being away for a year and he feels like this abject failure. Like, you know, I tried college and I blew college and now I've really screwed up and I don't know how to put my life back together. And that's, in a lot of ways, that's the least healthy way to look at this, right? I mean, part of it is like, okay, these things happen for a reason, and now I have this opportunity to kind of regroup and think about my life and how I want my life to progress. Much healthier approach, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess all this natural ability caught up to me, and I wasn't able to really get away with what I was able to get away with before. I was not able to study for tests a night before like I used to be able to. You
right,
know, I
right.
wasn't able to get away with, I guess, a minimal amount of effort in the way I lived my life.
But I don't hear you're not lamenting that it all hit the fan. You almost sound like you're celebrating it. Like, thank goodness.
Oh, absolutely. I'm very thankful for, I mean, it's unfortunate that, I don't want to say it's unfortunate that I'm home, but it's unfortunate that I wasn't able to continue my time at Mizzou. But I would, if I continued my time at Mizzou the way I had been before, that's when it really hits the fan or hits the ceiling, you know, like
yeah.
That's really, I'm just glad that I caught myself in. Nobody else caught me. Like, I caught myself.
Right, right, right. So entertain this thought for me. Let's say we had more mics set up and we had your parents flanking you right now. What would your parents have to say about, you know, about what's happened in the last, you know, few months of your life? Would they feel differently than you do?
Yes, only because they are my parents and mm-hmm. I know myself better than anyone else does. I see a life for myself that doesn't, I don't know, it keeps me from questioning where I stand right now.
Yeah.
You know, I am so excited, so thankful for what is later to come that it's not worth it to me to beat myself up because at the end of the day, it's not worth it. It's not going to get you anywhere. And life is too great to be anything less than positive.
What a profound lesson in the wake of anything that happens, right? You know, like, you know, we can spend a lot of time feeling lousy about ourselves, and that's wasted time,
mm-hmm.
Does nothing for our lives, does nothing to forward things. I really admire your ability to not just like seek out the silver lining. It seems like your default is to be really upbeat and positive. Where did you get this ability, man? I mean, this is not the norm. I don't think everybody thinks the way you do.
Yeah, it's weird because I'm when you think about it, like I'm positive about something that anyone could be, I guess, negative about. And to be, I don't know, I think that given these past few years, I'm just very thankful for the life that I've lived up until now. And there are so many people that are going to, if there are way too many people out there that are capable of falling into the same trap that I did. And
sure.
So vocalizing, you know, mistakes that I've made or things that I would have done differently, I think that's, it's so important. It's so important because what I let slip, I don't want to see anyone else let slip.
So for the guy who is at Mizzou or Iowa or Indiana or Illinois, sitting in his room, you know, kind of like unsure and flailing and, you know, slipping in confidence day to day to day, what do you say to that guy? Do you have advice for him?
Yeah. Bit of advice, contact me. I would be happy to talk to you about it because I could go on and on. But the second bit of advice would be to, I don't know, everyone needs to reevaluate and on a large scale.
Yeah.
You know, oftentimes people are too focused on such small things. There's too much small thinking, you know, and you need to be conscious of all that there is in your life.
Right.
You know, you can't change what is in the past. You can only change what is in the future.
So with that in mind, tell me about your future as much as you can.
Oh.
As much as you know.
I don't know what the future holds, but I'm determined to make it great. And I would love, truly, I love music. I love art. I love just, I don't know. They've brought me so much joy in my life, and I want to give that back to other people. Mm-hmm. And getting as close as I can to what has really affected me in a positive way is what I want to do for the rest of my life.
Yeah, your passion for music, it's hard not to catch it when I talk to you about music. You know, we could spend hours, man, talking about like what, you know, the kind of
exactly.
music that you love. It's and it's really fun to hear. I can imagine that there are parents listening to us right now whose pulses just quickened because they're thinking, oh God, you can't make a living in music.
Oh,
what's this guy gonna do? You know?
My parents would even say that, you know?
Right.
They're like, are you kidding me? Like there's no, you can't get anywhere with music or
right.
anything, you know? Like and having a mom who is an educator, you know, somebody who teaches kids, you know, she's a high school teacher.
Right.
That does not go over well with her.
That stacks the deck against you a little
exactly,
bit.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. How are you supposed to convince somebody who teaches for a living that you don't know if you want to be studying business in college and that you would rather be involved with music? And of course, college is so important. Getting a degree is so important. But more than that, I think finding out what your true passion is really the best step that you can start to take.
I agree. And I think that ignoring that, no matter what your passion is, ignoring that is just a setup for disaster and
yeah.
a lot of wasted time, you know? And I've got a lot of faith in you, Matt, that you're not going to waste much time, you know?
No. I mean, I've wasted time and when you look at, how long life is, I mean, it's short, but like the time that I've wasted, I don't want to say wasted, but just I've let things slip and I can't afford to let myself make that mistake again. And, you know, if I'm not doing my best, then I don't know. It's something I'm still learning.
Right.
You know, by no means do I have the answers. I'm still very, very, you know, uncertain of life, answers of life, you know?
Right, right.
But I guess just with the way I think about things now, I'm not worried. And that's my problem before. I was so worried about how things would turn out. And now I'm not necessarily worried. I'm more excited because I know what I'm doing is good. I know what I'm doing is what I love. And at the end of the day, what can go wrong if you're happy with what you're doing? You know?
I love that, man. Yeah. So you trust the process, but I also hear that you engage in the process. You know that you have to do things in order to make things happen. It's not just, you know, you're not just flowing down the river, you're paddling too.
Right. Yeah. I mean, whereas before, I was able to get away with natural ability, and now I'm using that natural ability to my advantage to allow me to become great.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah.
Not so much stay. I don't know. I want to thrive, not just get by.
Got. Yep.
And I know that I can, you know.
Clearly you can. I don't think there's anybody out there listening who doubts that you are going to kind of make your dreams come true. And listen, man, I honor you for that. And I think that's you have gifts to share with the world. And I'm excited that you're going to go out and do that.
I'm excited too.
Before I let you go, can I ask you about something completely different than what we're talking about?
Sure.
We all experience some kind of loss sometime in life, and sometimes some are more tragic than others, some are more expected than others. Somewhere along this process, you lost a close friend, yeah?
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about what that was like for you.
Man, that just really put my entire life into question. Mm-hmm. It just... Everyone has lost somebody, and whether it be a grandparent or any family member or anything, it's a lot different to lose somebody who's close to your age.
Yeah.
You know?
Especially when you're so young.
Exactly. When you're young, somebody, it really just like, you're like, whoa, like what the heck is going on? Like, what? When you don't expect it.
Mm-hmm. Just rocks your world.
It rocks your world. It makes you question everything. It makes you, I don't know. You cling to the past and what was, you know, once normal, because the second that somebody's gone, life isn't the same, and it's definitely not normal.
Right. Right. So being kind of as upbeat a guy as you are, how do you adapt to the new abnormal world without this guy?
I see how precious human life is. Regardless of who you're talking about, life is so precious. And just being conscious of that 24 hours of the day, 7 days a week, 365 days of the year. Just know that wherever you stand in life, it can get better.
Yeah.
And not everyone has the same, you know, blessing that you do to have the freedom to enjoy your life. That's one thing, is just the freedom. You have infinite amount of freedom to do what you love and to love the life that you live. And I think that's just like that's the key, is there's nothing you could do about the past now. And you can remember it. You can be happy, sad, confused about the past, but it's getting hung up on the past is not going to help you in the future.
And what a great way to honor somebody, the loss of somebody, to live every moment, right? And to be grateful for it. And I can tell, Matt, that you are so grateful for every moment that you have and every day. And it comes through every word that you say. There are people in my generation who think, oh, your generation isn't kind, isn't thoughtful. You know, you guys are kind of ruled by social media and video games. And man, anybody listening to this guy, Matt, in the last hour, I dare you to carry that thought one more second, because this is a kind, thoughtful, talented guy. I so appreciate you being here. I'm excited for you and your future. And will you come back and see me again?